breaking ball and a call. Strike three. Third strikeout for Zach.
He's going to just watch it go. A grand slam for Bryson Stott.
And there's a high fly ball. Deep right field. Harper watches it fly.
From WHYY, it is hitting season. Hey there, podcast pals. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight. You can follow me on X and Blue Sky at John Stolness. Coming up, we're going to talk a little bit about the Phillies-Guardian series that wrapped up over the weekend, but we are recording here on Monday evening for the roundtable as the Phillies are opening up their three-game series with the red-hot running Redbirds, the St. Louis Cardinals at Citizens Bank Park. And as we are recording, it's the seventh inning, and it's all tied up at 2-2. So histrionics and last-minute reactions to things as they happen are sure to come here on the podcast, which I know everyone loves. But we are also at the one-quarter mark of the Philly season, so we're going to hand out some generic grades. We're not going to go player by player, but just some areas of the team on how they've done in the first quarter and maybe kind of look ahead just a little bit. And, of course, you know, we will kind of take a look back at the Cleveland series just a bit. And also a little bit of nonsense at the end of the podcast having to do with the Rockies and the Pirates, who have become the first two teams in baseball to fire their managers. So lots of good stuff here on this edition of Hittin' Season. Again, it is the roundtable. Justin Clue from Baseball Prospectus. Follow him on Blue Sky at Justin Clue. Now, when at the end of the show last week, Justin, you said that I neglected to introduce you. But if you go back and re-listen, you will hear that I was in the process of introducing you when you jumped in. So I got and Justin Clue from Baseball Prospectus. And that's as much as I was able to get out. So I just wanted to.
So in your mind, an incomplete task is a fulfilled task. In your mind, getting halfway there is good enough.
Well, I was interrupted by the man himself. I mean, come on.
No wonder you dislike Max Kepler.
I figure that if I'm painting a house and the scaffolding is pulled out from under me, it's not my fault. It didn't get finished.
The house is done.
I feel like a true champion finds a way. I feel like a professional painter finds a way to finish the job even without scaffolding. But I know you're from a different time and you just need a whole bunch of amenities that other people may not, like scaffolding or an unfractured spine. But hey, you know, some of us find a way to finish painting the house and some of us make excuses a week later.
You know, it actually kind of takes me back when I was the summer after my freshman year of college. I did my one manual labor outdoor summer work in my life. And it was, you know.
Sounds hard.
It was awful. It was exterior home painting. It was exterior home painting for a summer. And we didn't have scaffolding. And I remember specifically, there were a number of times I'm up on a 50-foot ladder on the side of a house on a driveway. An incline driveway, and we've got tarps shoved up underneath one of the feet of the ladder to make it even as we have it laid up against the house. And I'm hanging off the sides, like scraping caulk off the side of the building and painting. I don't know, for $7 an hour, which when you're 19 years old was, I mean, you can't do any better than that. But it was a nightmare job.
The 40s were a different time, I'm telling you, man.
I was going to say, way back in 1958.
The whitewash is just lead also, and so, you know, you breathe in enough of the lead, eventually you start to, you know.
Now, you stave off the lead poisoning with a handful of asbestos.
That's right.
You just jam it in there so it gets in your glands, and that staves off the paint poisoning, for sure.
That's what we did in the 40s.
Off to Vietnam with you.
And when you're in Vietnam, that asbestos is going to help your lungs not catch on fire.
That's right.
For a few days.
That's right.
For
That's
the first few days.
It's insulation for a reason. I figured it insulates everything, right? That other voice you hear is Liz Rocher, of course, senior editor of Sabres Baseball Research Journal. Follow her on X and Blue Sky at Liz Rocher. Lizbeth, how are you feeling?
Jonathan, I don't think that's your full name. Doing
not
good.
At all.
I've got the game on in front of me, and as the episode opened a little bit after, I actually turned it on, and what I saw was a Cardinals player jogging for a home run right past Matt Strom.
Yeah,
so
that happened.
We launched Matt Strom into the sun, or maybe just temporarily, like away from the Phillies.
Matt's been good this year. I don't know that his stuff has been as good as it has been in recent years, but the results have been pretty good. But yeah, giving up a home run there after, and the offense had an opportunity to to really take advantage of a good scoring opportunity, but Bryson Stott wasn't able to take advantage. I mean, first and second, one out. Stott's up in the count 3-1. You think you got a good shot at getting a crooked inning here, and it didn't work out. Stott and Kepler were not able to make anything happen there. So now the Phillies have three more shots at this, down by a run. It still feels like a win to me. We'll see as the podcast goes along. But the Phillies
depends on how many more Kyle Schwarber at bats there are in this game.
Yep, he may have to do it himself. Hit the solo 5-run homer, because only he can do that right now. Brandon Marsh just struck out looking. The Phillies come into this game 24-16 on the season, having a very nice season thus far. 1.5 games behind the Mets for first place in the National League East. Again, I said 25% of the season is now in the books. And after winning 2 out of 3, winning the final 2 games of the series against the Guardians, the Phillies have now won 5 straight series. As hot as they were at this time last year, they did not win 5 series in a row all last year, which is kind of hard to believe. But they did not do something that they just did now, and it was a great road trip, 5-1 in the 6-game road trip. So I guess, you know, let me start off with the road trip and our thoughts as we get into this Cardinals series here. Cardinals won 8 in a row coming into Philadelphia, but the Phillies, Justin, playing really good baseball right now. And this, again, kind of proves the point. Maybe you do have to let the things play out a little bit.
I don't think anybody... I think I've spent the last 6 weeks explaining that I know the difference between short and long-term success, and that an emotional response in the moment is not necessarily an indicator of projection.
Right.
But in any case,
you can be frustrated in the moment and still understand it's a long season, and that's kind of our thing here on the podcast. You know,
it's kind of being a baseball fan.
Right.
If you're capable of going down to the ballpark and paying to get in and sitting in a seat and sitting there with your arms folded, and your eyes glazed over, and having absolutely no reaction to anything in front of you, and just level headed, like you watched that Cardinals home run that untied the game again, and thought like, well, it's May. It's like, yeah, I mean, I'm not thinking in terms of, well, now they're definitely going to lose, or if they lose, they're definitely not going to the playoffs, or they're going to lose a bunch of games in a row. I'm thinking, man, you know what would have been great is if he'd gotten that out instead of giving up the store. That would have been terrific. So naturally, I'm a little displeased. But in any case, yeah, it's been kind of an up and down month. But again, we kind of hit on this topic a little bit ago where you were still learning what is and isn't normal for this particular Phillies team. You know, you don't know in the first month of the season, is this something that's going to keep happening for the rest of the year, or is this something that's going to be worked out of their system by the end of the month? And I feel like we've seen a Phillies team after about 6 weeks that has a really steady form of success, if not utterly dominant, which I kind of prefer. Teams that operate in extremes, like this Cardinals team, like the Twins in the American League right now, I mean, if they can win 8 games in a row, they've clearly proven also this year that they can lose 8 games in a row. Like their success coming in patches like that is not an indicator of consistency or cohesion for a team. So I would much prefer that the Phillies, and we're going to get into some actual statistical talk that almost proves this point later in this episode, but there's some comfort in being like middle of the pack in some areas. Like obviously the Phillies are excelling at some things, but knowing that they're not like the team that is, you know, performing at a level that is impossible to sustain makes it their success more like feasible and enjoyable. Like just keep winning series. That's a great way to rack up wins and lower the deficit between you and whoever's ahead of you in the division. Like the way they're playing now, just this steady success is really healthy, and it's not putting all the weight on somebody's shoulder. Like they can, Schwarber's been hitting more than anybody right now, but you can look at a game to game basis and you can find a night where Trey Turner was hitting really well. You can find a night where Brandon Marsh really went off recently. You know, it's a shared success, and it doesn't rely on somebody being hot. It just relies on good players playing steadily. So that's been where I've kind of landed here in mid-May after a tumultuous beginning of the season.
Yeah, Liz, I mean, here we are, and it has been kind of uneven, but I think Justin's right. It is consistency that you're looking for from a team. You don't have to race out to these, you know, 10 game winning streaks. And one of the things too, though, is when you do win like those first two games of a series and you have a chance to sweep, it's those missed opportunities are frustrating. And the Phillies finally were able to do that on this road trip. They're able to win that final game of a series to get that sweep. And I know you guys talked about that on the end of the week edition of the podcast that y'all did last week, but you know, when you can't do that, you say you lose the first game, you lose the second game, just winning that series, you just keep piling those series wins. And now all of a sudden you went from a team that was 500 a couple of weeks ago and heading in the wrong direction to now a team that's 8 games over .500 coming into Monday and playing really good baseball.
I mean, things can change just that fast in sports, in any sport. Like hockey is a great example because that's the sport you watch in the playoffs when you want to feel like you're doing drugs. When you want to feel like you're doing serious heavy drugs, you watch hockey. And that sort of gives you an idea of the pace of other sports. Like hockey, things change in an instant. Just you could score two goals in the span of like less than an actual second. Hockey is incredible like that. Baseball, the big changes come after the games are over, mostly. You know, you look one week and then change happens slower because you look one week and the Phillies are under 500 and 5 days later, 6 days later, you're like, oh, they've won four games in a row. They only dropped one. You know, they're on the way up. They're doing better. And because it's such a long season with so many games, you know, really the only emotions you're allowed to have are happiness and sadness, just constantly, you know, butting heads with each other. Just hoping one or the other dies before they do.
So I will say in reactionary's defense, there has been almost like a half season at least worth of like full narrative arcs already. We've already had a Brandon Marsh is terrible, is injured, and is back and hitting better than ever arc completely within the first 5 weeks of the season. There's been an Alec Bohm redemption arc in a small way. Kyle Schwarber pre-June hitting. Like there's been a lot of up, down, you know, what is this guy going to figure it out? And obviously the boon of saying that in April is that there is so much real estate left for him. Yes. To figure that out. And that's great to remind yourself of in the moment. But like, you know, when the Phillies blow a lead for like the third game in a row and the bullpen's looking rough, you know, that's, you're not going to react positively to that. I don't know why we have to explain that every year.
Well, and the other thing, too, is that it wasn't, you know, part of the frustration from this first month is it was a piggyback from the second half of last year. And so any criticism of the first month is like, they've been playing this way since the second half of last year. And it's the same players. So you can't argue, well, new year, new team. It's not a new team. These are all the same players. And so that thread from last year, from the second half on and in the playoffs, it was kind of the concern was, is that who we are now, you know, carrying that through to 2025? And, you know, maybe who knows how long this good run lasts. You know, this, I think the thing that I come back to with this 2025 Phillies team is that they're a whole lot like the 2024 Phillies, who were a whole lot like the 2023 Phillies, which were remarkably similar to the 2022 Phillies. Like, if you're getting my drift, this team is what it is. And without a major change in the offseason, which we didn't get, there wasn't going to be, it doesn't seem like there's going to be a major identity change. Like what we've seen from this team in 2025 is what we've seen from them every year of this era. And for better or worse, and mostly it's been for the better, that's who they are.
Getting swept by the Mets was, I don't know how it'll wind up getting framed, but like that was the last truly bad series this Phillies team has played. And I don't know. I mean, I guess I'm just jumping off your point of saying it's a continuation of last year and that like that playoff elimination in particular is one of the distinguishing factors of that year. And, you know, running into that team again in the stadium where you lost it again and having absolutely no success again was hopefully it had as much of a, this is how I'll put it, hopefully it had as much of an impact on the Phillies themselves as it did on their fans.
Yeah,
because I think that was an emotional touchstone for people in this season, and it's great that ever since then they've been playing really well. So I'm hoping that had a similar effect, because it had an effect on a lot of people out here.
It did. All right, well, the first quarter of the season is in the books. Let's just hand out some quick grades for the different areas of the team. Again, we don't need to get into specific players, but Let's start off with the starting rotation. And if you want a reason why this team is playing as well as it is, it has to be the starting rotation first and foremost. They are keeping their team, not only just keeping the team in every game, they're dominating most opponents right now so that the offense doesn't even have to do a whole lot. Zach Wheeler last Tuesday went 7 innings, gave up just 2 runs with 9 strikeouts against the Rays. You had Christopher Sanchez going 6 innings with no runs allowed in the game on Wednesday against the Rays. Luzardo, who's been their most effective pitcher, didn't have his best stuff, but still pitched into the 6th inning, gave up just 2 runs. Aaron Nola had the worst start of the week, and even that was not great. 5 innings, 4 earned runs, but could have been better if he'd gotten a little bit of run support. The Phillies came in at like 2 in the morning in Cleveland, so it was kind of understandable them losing that game. And then Saturday, Suarez goes 7 shutout innings, and Zach Wheeler goes 7 shutout innings in back-to-back starts. In the game here on Monday night, Christopher Sanchez pitches a great game, 2 runs allowed, 6 innings, and had 9 strikeouts in the game. So again, Liz, a great run of starting pitching here, and it's really been, I think, their strength this season. If you had to give the starting rotation a letter grade for the first quarter of the season, what are you giving them?
Like, it's in my nature to want to couch it a little bit and be like, there's room for growth. But I mean, I can't even give them an A-. They deserve an A, even with some of the small missteps we've seen, some disappointing things. Even Taiwan Walker's been really, I mean, when he was in the starting rotation, he wasn't a massive disaster, which is such an improvement over 2024. That's like a big deal. Doesn't mean that we have to like him or accept him, Justin, but we do have to at least recognize that he is that he has not been a detraction from the overall rotation when he has been there.
Yeah, it was really bad baseball analysis of me to not trust the 2024 form of Taiwan Walker. I forgot how everybody else on this show was wearing their Taiwan Walker jerseys and pom-poms and talking about how they couldn't wait for his next appearance because it always was good news when the gate started swinging and Taiwan Walker came in from the bullpen.
So, I always hoped that if I had a ticket to a game, it was a Taiwan Walker game. And I'm sorry you didn't feel that way.
I urge you all to listen back to that clip at the during the preseason where you can hear me definitely agreeing with Justin, like 100% agreeing with almost absolutely no positive things to say. So
I made the classic baseball analyst mistake of basing my opinion on what I was seeing and feeling and thinking from a player who was breaking and failing and sucking. That was my bad.
You took a solid position, and that's where you went wrong.
I also said every time that I think he is a great person, and I don't go out of my way to say that about every player.
No, that's true. Taiwan Walker is a good dude.
Additionally, I have owned this multiple times already this season.
I'm sorry, you said something normal that turned out to be wrong.
And I also have one thing to say about Taiwan Walker as a starter. He was okay. Like, I mean, the fact he wasn't a disaster is kind of what makes everybody, but he was fine. It's okay, but he could barely pitch into the 5th inning most times, and that's okay. You know, it's all right. He did his job, did what he needed to do. But you know, I know that you look at the ERA, it's like 2. Whatever. Oh my gosh! But it was what it was. But
he threw 3 scoreless innings of relief, struck out 7 of the 9 batters he faced, and earned his first save. The debate is over.
That was great.
Taiwan Walker is a reliever now. He is a long reliever.
He's a reliever now.
The end.
That's right. Justin, you didn't give a grade on the starting rotation.
I'm giving them an A. I feel like it's been a real whirring blender of it's not even like it's been, oh yeah, they've been everything's been good. No, you got to wait for Suarez to come back. You had a Christopher Sanchez injury scare. Aaron Nola took forever to have a start that people didn't feel sad about in one way or another. So, you know, even with things going imperfectly, even Zach Wheeler looked a little slow to start the season.
Yeah.
Yet they remain as good as they are. The Dodgers have a bunch of hurt starting pitchers. The Mets don't give up runs. The Cubs don't really walk people. The Phillies have realistically good numbers in like all of those categories, and they really excel at striking batters out where they're the best, and they don't give up walks either. They have like the 4th least walks in the National League. So they are handling, like, in the battle of pitcher versus batter, the Phillies are handling their business, and it really starts with the starting rotation.
Yeah, Zach Wheeler on Sunday had his 109th start of six or more innings since the start of 2020. That is 13 more than anybody else. And he is the Phillies' all-time leader in ERA plus with starters starts of at least 100 with people who have at least 100 starts. Paul Hempikides tweeted this out at 143. Cliff Lee is next at 132. Then you have Kurt Schilling at 126. Cole Hamels 124. Jim Bunning and Roy Halladay at 122. And Steve Carlton at 120. I'm surprised Carlton was that low. Zach Wheeler has been truly dominant. And yeah, this is an A rotation. I mean, Aaron Nola has struggled. The fact that Aaron Nola is clearly your fifth best starter right now, that says something, because he's been twirling it pretty good aside from last week, over the last few starts. And, you know, it was Rangers had one bad start, one good start, one bad start, one great start. But he looked so much better in his last start. So I think that's what was the most encouraging thing about this rotation. If all these guys are just pitching like they normally do, there's no weak spot. There's no weak point. The only weakness is maybe the home run ball that some of these guys give up every once in a while. You know, and that's not great, but, you know, it's certainly better than guys who have no command whatsoever and are walking six guys. So an A from the starting rotation from all of us there. The offense, Justin, been pretty up and down. Matt Gelb had this interesting note. If it feels like the Phillies have used a lot of batting orders this year, they kind of have. They've used 20 different batting orders this season, but that's actually the fewest of any team in Major League Baseball. I was shocked at that. The average is like 35 different starting lineups, and it can be just one different guy moved here and there. But the Phillies lineup has been remarkably consistent and solid, comparatively speaking, around Major League Baseball. And it's been in waves like it normally is with this group, Justin. So what is your grade that you give the lineup and the offense here through one quarter of the season?
Well, they've been getting enough of the job done lately, so I've met a B minus because they think they're still liable to let you down. I mean, as successful enough as they've been, it's like you said, it's the same offense, so it's very reliant on the one or two guys who are hitting as well as they're supposed to be, and then the collection of guys who are either underperforming or totally slumping. And it's just a matter of figuring out, you know, which plate to spin next. They're supposed to be a pitching first team, but they're also, I think, supposed to hit better. Even now, as they've been winning, there are guys who really could be hitting better. But again, as far as expectations, if you're going with this is the same team, then this is all, none of this is new to you. You know, in a couple of weeks, Nick Castellanos will be hitting and Trey Turner will be on fire. Eventually, Bryce Harper will, you know, stop hitting all these annoying doubles and hit home runs. So mad at him. Ultimately, this offense is what it has always been, which is totally capable of succeeding at a high level and also totally able to be shut out by a rookie making his major league debut.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty fair analysis. Liz, what's your grade for the offense so far?
I mean, I can't say I've much different to say than Justin. Just for the sake of being different, I'll give him a C. Because things that stick in my craw are just those moments where everything is set up to work, and all you have to do is what you did last at bat yesterday, what you're gonna do tomorrow, you know, and the next day after that. But today you're just not doing it for some reason, and that stuff really stays with me after a game. I wake up in the morning and I'm super annoyed at it because this is a game of instant reactions, that cool down eventually. So I'll just say, I'll give him a C and be like, I'm excited to see many of the Phillies that that Justin mentioned make their way to better hitting.
Yeah, I'll split the difference. I'll say a C plus because I think you're right, Liz. I think the runners in scoring position thing early in the season was really debilitating. But again, that kind of thing comes and goes. It usually doesn't last for a full season, and we've seen that turn around a little bit. They had some bad luck early in the season, but you've got guys like Bryce Harper who are hitting under 240. He's just not. I mean, he's doing enough good things that he's
holy
not
crap! It's JoJo Romero.
Yeah, I'm like, wow. There he is, still alive.
Sorry about that.
Who are we talking about?
I know. Since I cut you off, it will be impossible to finish painting the house.
Yeah. So now we have to. That'll do it for this edition of Hitting Season. JoJo Romero. We're talking about entering the game. JoJo Romero against Bryson Stott here with runners on first and second and two out in the bottom of the eighth inning. I don't like this. I don't like this matchup. Okay. As far as the offense, I'll give them a C plus. Again, I think the
sucked.
you're wishing that there's a little bit more power from some of these guys. Like Alec Bohm is no longer like a drag on the team, but not giving you, I mean, for a guy his size to not hit better is it to hit for more power is you'd want more there, but you know, you'll take what you can get right now. Kyle Schwarber has kind of carried this offense, if we're being honest about it.
Very much.
And if were it not for Kyle Schwarber's heroics right now, this offense might still be struggling quite a bit. So it's great that they have a guy who's carrying them right now, and other guys are contributing, like Bryson Stott's been contributing. JT's been contributing a little bit. Alec Bohm has been – like you're getting some contributions, but the one guy driving this offense right now is Kyle Schwarber. And, you know, obviously we're all – like get the extension done. Get an extension done. What are we doing here? 47 game on base streak after getting on base Monday night against the Cardinals. One behind Bobby Abreu. I think it's for third longest in team history right now. Leading the National League in home runs. I mean, so doing a lot of great things, and he's kind of been the pace setter. You want to see Bryce Harper kind of join the mix. And Trey Turner has been much better as of late at the plate. Kind of doing what you want at the top of the lineup. You know, he's not hitting for power, but I don't want him to hit for 20. I don't want him to hit 25 home runs. I would like to see some more extra base hits in the gaps and stuff like that. But right now, what he's given you offensively, I will take it. He's certainly been a better, more consistent player. So that's the nice thing about this offense is I think there's room for growth. There's room for this team to get better offensively. So we'll see how that goes. All right, bullpen. I'll start off with a bullpen grade. I'm going to give the bullpen a C-, and I think I'm being kind of generous with a C- right now, only because it's been improving over the last couple of weeks. Last 14 days, the bullpen ERA is 3.20, which is ninth in baseball, and the fielding independent pitching is actually third best in baseball with a 2.84. They have the third most wins above replacement over the last 14 days, and we're seeing some of these guys kind of fix what was going on. Jordan Romano looks like he's in a much better place now than he was a couple of weeks ago. I still, you know, I don't know how much you trust Orion Kerkering yet. Again, Strom, you kind of trust him more than the other guys, but again, gives up the go-ahead home run here on Monday night. Carlos Hernandez, you don't really trust. I mean, you trust Jose Alvarado right now, and that's really all you truly trust. So it's...
I don't trust Tanner Banks.
Nope, don't trust Tanner Banks either.
And even trusting Alvarado is like a scary carousel ride sometimes. It's, you know, it can be broken and all of the animals on it are making stupid faces at you. Like, it can be like that for like a week.
Yeah. But I mean, I do think the bullpen has been more reliable over the last couple of weeks, and that's been good to see. And really, they needed Jordan Romano to turn it around, and it's good to see him doing that. So they need another right-hander. They need Kerkering to find it. But when you've got Alvarado, you've got Romano, you got Strom, they've all been pitching pretty well here over the last couple of weeks. Joe Ross has also picked it up quite a bit over the last couple of weeks. He's pitched really well in the role. And I'm very intrigued by what we saw from Taiwan Walker in that relief appearance against the Rays. Very, very intrigued. He's not a guy who's going to be able to go back to back because he has that starter's mentality still. So it's going to be hard for him to be a back-to-back night guy. And I don't really, have we seen him again since that outing? I don't think we've seen him again since that three inning outing. So kind of interested to see him get back out there and see if he can do it again. But I'll go C- on the bullpen. I have a feeling I'm going to be the high man here. Justin, what's your grade for the bullpen?
I had him at a C. I feel like I've been very encouraged by recent success. I feel like issues like this that are issues tend to linger longer, so I feel like they are actually fixing and adjusting, and I was not expecting that quick of a pivot from Romano. I felt like he was going to be out there struggling, you know, and at least being inconsistent a bit longer before we started seeing any other kind of pattern. But fortunately, yeah, again, another guy who is very important, because there's also been some indications that the Phillies are just kind of short a guy in the bullpen, another veteran experienced arm to come in late into games. You know, as we know from the offseason, it feels like they replaced two guys with one. And there are times when that has not, certainly not been in their favor. And even if it has been, it's the kind of thing that you're going to run out of luck on that real fast. So as far as like usage and who we've seen the most of and compared to last year, I wound up with a C because, you know, I'm encouraged by what I've seen of late, but this team's bullpen is different.
Well, they are unique, are they not, Liz?
It's a great way to put it. Yeah. I've got them at a C minus. It's been dragged up from a D plus, thanks to a couple of recent outings from guys. I mean, Kirkering just now looked pretty good.
Yeah.
In the eighth inning here, Tanner Banks is trying all of our patience, or at least just being there is trying our patience because we're all concerned. But, you know, like that recent outing, that recent one inning outing from Carlos Hernandez, where he struck out the, or where he, did he strike out the side or what did he do? He came in for just one, I think for one batter and struck him out. And it was like the best thing he'd done, you know, ever almost. So yeah. For the Phillies. So that's the type of thing that sort of had me dragging it up a little bit because you could see improvement.
Yeah, and I think that's what you want to see. And we know with bullpens, they are volatile. We mentioned last year the Phillies had the third worst bullpen ERA in April, and then in May it was number one. So again, this can turn around from month to month, and then the next month it can go any number of different ways. And so good to see some things moving forward there on the bullpen front. Defense, I did include defense here because I think defense has been a major storyline here for the first quarter of the season. And again, we all in this podcast have talked a lot about, especially the up the middle defense. You know, Trey Turner was obviously hearing it last week. That's died down a little bit this week, but still an issue at shortstop, still an issue in center field a lot of nights. Second base and catcher, you're pretty good, but third base is a little bit of an issue. The defense has cost them outs. It's cost them some innings. It's cost them some runs. It's cost them some games. I have the defense at a D plus as well, because not only are they. I said D plus as well. I haven't given anyone a D plus yet, but I have the defense as a D plus. Not only are they kind of costing you some things, they also don't really have anyone elite that I'm seeing. You know, there's nobody out there. You're like, wow, look what this guy does in the outfield. Like Kepler is a very good defensive left fielder. Harper is a Gold Glove caliber first baseman. But again, aside from JT Realmuto throwing out base runners, I'm not seeing, you know, there's no one on the defense that's making up for some of the lackluster play and the bonehead moves on defense. So if there's one area of the team that I think has really been the weakest that they need to improve, and I think they can improve on, it's the defense, Liz.
Yeah, I mean, I give them a big fat F just for fun, mostly because the one thing that I think, like, what do I remember from the defense? And I could not, to save my life, remember one major outstanding play that I would, whoa! Oh, thank God. Or that's incredible. And they don't, since they don't have an elite guy, I'm just, I remember a lot of the bad things. And like how, I think Turner had two errors in one game, or I don't think one was called an error, but he has not looked great at various times. You know, Alec Bohm has had some oopsies. Bryce Harper had an oopsie. You know, it's just, I don't know why it continues to be such an issue and what they can do to fix it. That's kind of the thing. It's that I think they always say they want to fix it, but how serious are they about it?
Yeah.
You know, they're, as much as I want them to all run drills, you know, every day for like a month, they're not going to do that because these are adult men with families and lives. And, you know, they've been in baseball for quite a while and the manager's not going to make them do that. So I would just like to see things become a little neater, things done with intention. You know, I think there's just a lot of, yeah, I know how to do this, you know, and they're all of a sudden the ball is out of the glove and not in their hand anymore. So.
Well, before we go to you, Justin, for your defensive grade, we're in the bottom of the ninth now, this game on Monday night. Future Phillies closer Ryan Helsley is on the mound going up against Max Kepler here with the bases empty.
No, he's not.
Nope. No.
You're ahead of me. You guys are like 10 seconds ahead of me, which kind of stinks. I'm watching on my Roku. So yeah, it's not a good at bat from Max Kepler, but
no.
Stop me if you've heard me say that before. Justin, grade the defense.
I also said a D plus. I don't know, guys. The Phillies are a weak team defensively. It's just
their
not
weakness.
Something they're good at.
Yeah.
I don't know if they will get better at it. I think a lot about Johan Rojas, who is supposed to be, by his nature, a defensive asset. I've seen him make three plays this year that are worse than any other ones the Phillies have had this season, and looked just like he wasn't sure what was supposed to happen. Even just like gravitationally, not like even within the world of baseball. So when moments like that happen and they seem, you know, even just once is too many, and you've seen multiple times plays like that happen, and, you know, general sloppiness or inability to get there. It's all part of the overall statement that, yeah, these Phillies defense has never been. Some of them made incredible plays, and a bunch of them were nominated for Gold Gloves last year.
Yeah.
The defense has never and probably will never be a complete strength for this team.
That is interesting that they did have three Gold Glove nominees a year ago. Right side of the infield's fine. You know, Harper and Stott, and, you know, Real Muto's still doing it. All right, last thing
was
we're going to...
Did Suarez get nominated last year?
Was it Ranger? Was it Zach? It was Zach, wasn't it? Oh, it was 2 years ago Zach won, right?
But Ranger is one of their best defenders.
Right.
Yeah.
And he didn't have enough innings to qualify.
Right. But I just want to use that as an excuse because I just remembered that I found out listening to the radio broadcast that Kevin Stocker hates how Ranger Suarez plays defense so nonchalantly. And it's never really cost him, even though sometimes you think, hey, man, you better throw that ball. And Kevin Stocker is not entertained and hates it. Yep. It's hilarious.
He's a gem. I really enjoy it.
Kevin Stocker's the best. Yeah. He's great. He's a worrier, though. I think that's what you can say. He's a worrier.
It makes him more human.
It does. It does. All right. The manager through the first quarter of the season, Justin, what grade do you give Rob Thompson through the season's first quarter?
Don't know. I wind up thinking about the manager a lot less than other people.
I do, too.
Especially in this kind of case where, look, again, you know these Phillies and you know Rob Thompson and you know how he manages them. You know, everybody he considers central to the team's success is going to get the most chances in the world to pull out of a slump or show that they are able to perform at the level they're supposed to perform at. It's why he's had success as a manager. And, you know, there's been a couple of times this year, you know, okay, maybe you question bullpen management, but like that moment he didn't come into the game and like get in the ump's face. So JT Realmuto didn't have to get in the ump's face. And, you know, you have little moments like that. But like ultimately, I find I still trust Rob Thompson to be like, you know, guiding this particular team. I feel like he's entrenched with them enough that, you know, his decision anywhere I disagree with him strategically, which happens on occasion, is forgivable ultimately, because the end result of this Phillies team has been a really good team that keeps going to the postseason, and this team is playing really well. So I don't know. I can't give him less than like an A-.
Yeah. Liz?
Yeah, I pretty much agree. I was thinking a B+, just I don't even know why, honestly. Because an A-minus is more than appropriate. He has been getting a lot more animated. He doesn't do the thing when he comes out of the dugout where he just stands in one place and yells and points. He'll move around and talk, and he'll just make a lot of faces, and he'll do a lot of just sort of small hand gestures.
Aggressive chewing.
Yes, it's like sort of, you know, and you could tell he's talking at volume. You could tell he's really annoyed. And so I think I at least want to give him a break on some of his Sorry, I was watching the Phillies lose the game.
So they lost. Okay. I still haven't seen the final pitch yet. Okay.
So sorry. Yeah. My fault. You were ahead, but I had to explain why I had stopped speaking. But yeah, I think Thompson is like the perfect, he's the perfect manager now for the Phillies for the last 2 years and for at least the next few. You know, he knows what his job is, and he doesn't do a lot of stuff that bothers us as fans. You know, that's the thing. We don't think of him a lot. As Justin said, we just don't think of him very much, which is fine. It's what we want. It's the opposite of the guy, two guys before him, and even one guy before him. Like, those were guys at least one of them wanted to be the center of attention, and was. Like, I don't think about Thompson most of the time, and that's, I think, how it should be.
Yeah. Yeah. Gabe Kapler for a few years was the face of the Phillies, which you don't want your manager to be the face of your franchise, unless, you know, he's Tommy Lasorda, and even then that probably gets old after a while, you know, but at least Lasorda wins, you know, where you won. back in the day.
And eventually sometimes punches the fanatic. I mean,
right, exactly, exactly. But like Lasorda was in on the joke a little bit back in the day, although sometimes not too, you know.
No.
I agree with you guys. I mean, this is a pro Rob Thompson podcast. I mean, we certainly will criticize him when he has made in-game decisions we disagree with. We, I think, ripped him fairly for that awful third strike call in real time. And we were all like, get out there, man. Talk to yell at some, get protect your player. But, you know, that's not how he operates. And this team just wins games, tonight's game aside. But the Phillies just, they consistently win, you know, and take, you know, every single manager is going to make moves you don't like with the bullpen, with the lineup and everything else. And I will certainly criticize when it's time, and we all will on the podcast. But yeah, I think Rob Thompson just kind of is happy to be in the background. He communicates well with his players. Everybody knows where they stand. He generally gets the most out of them. I think he's an A-minus manager through the first quarter this year as well. I did want to just play. I mentioned to people out there that if you want to be a part of the show, that you can send us a voice memo to our hittinseason@billypenn.com email address, and you can leave a comment, ask a question, all that kind of stuff. One of our great longtime listeners, Keith Koblund, been with the podcast since the beginning.
Hi,
like
Keith.
Way back in an OG podcast, pal, send in a voice memo to us through the hittinseason@billypenn.com email address. Taking issue a little bit with us some of our vociferous reactions through the first quarter. So give it a listen.
John, Liz, Justin, first and foremost, love the podcast. Always have, always will. That said, I listened this morning before going to work, and I'm glad I wasn't in the car because I'd want to drive off the road. I will say this, though. This is a team that historically has been streaky, as we all know. They streak and they slump. The only way this team is going to win the World Series is if they streak at the right time and become that powerhouse that we all want them to be throughout the season. We've already proven starting hot doesn't work. And what we need to do is get hot late. I don't think that's a secret, but I think all of you need to realize this is going to be a long slog this year, and we need for you all to stay positive. Otherwise, I can listen to, well, a couple of radio stations I won't mention. Have a great podcast, and thanks again for listening to my rant.
All right, so there's Keith a little bit. Keith, I am glad you were able to pull over to the side of the road. I would not want to see an accident occur because of our shenanigans here on the podcast. But, you know, guys, I mean, I feel like I get what Keith's saying. You know, it is, and it's kind of what we said a little bit at the earliest part of the podcast. We're going to react in real time to things. We just are. And we're going to get upset about things as they happen in real time. And that's okay. I think everything we say should be taken with the caveat. Like if it's April or May, we know it's early, but we're kind of projecting a little bit. Like, is this going to be a problem down the road? Is this going to be an issue? Especially if it's been an issue the last 3 or 4 months going back to last year. And these are the same players kind of doing the same things. You know, it'd be different if it was out of character or something like that. That's why you don't really worry, Justin, about Bryce Harper all that much. Because getting off to a slow power start like this is out of character for him, kind of. So, I don't know. What are your thoughts, Justin, on Keith's voice memo?
It would be great if we could just repeat your own individual thoughts back to you, and that could be the show, so that there would be absolutely nothing disagreeable. But unfortunately, we don't have that technology yet, and we're still reliant on
AI is here to help us, though.
On our human instincts and emotions. Yeah, I don't know. I'm just really sick of the negative label. I think there's a healthy amount of criticism on this show. And I think during the Phillies' last downward spiral, we chose to do an entire episode on the underlying successes of the Phillies and how they could lead. You know, these are indicators of future success down the road, even though things aren't really, you know, going well right now. And then things turned around. I predicted Max Kepler would get hot, and then he got hot. I'm not saying this because of rightness. I say it out of moments recently that were inherently not negative. So, you know, positivity happens, you know, something good happens and it's yay, that happened. Something negative happens and it's, okay, this is a problem. What's the cause of it? Who's at the center of it? What are things that could happen to solve it? What are things that could happen if they don't solve it? What's going to be the fallout of it currently? What is available as a solution? What is not available as a solution? There's a lot of layers when there's issues. Like, what if, when is Bryce Harper going to turn it on? When is he traditionally turn it on? The things that are wrong with this team are things people are going to talk about. And so on a podcast, which is what's called an audio medium, you want to be able to have conversations with each other that are like engaging and entertaining. And so problems are, you know, that's usually a good topic to work out in a medium like this. So while I'll never cop to us being overly negative. I will say that we will continue to critique even Phillies teams that are playing well.
It's what
while celebrating them.
Yeah, I mean, Liz, I agree with that. I agree with all that. We are analysts too, but we're fan analysts. You know, we all write
analysts.
But we are analysts.
Is that like an SB Nation term?
Don't probably. Don't use that.
Yeah.
Let's never say it again.
Let's not do that. Hey, some of us still write for SB Nation, so just to my SB Nation overlord. So.
I'm not laughing for any reason.
I'm on board.
I forgot they were. Never mind.
Yeah, they're still around, Justin.
Let's take bets on for how
you
long.
Do good work at thegoodfight.com, everybody.
Yes,
so
they do. Goodfight.com.
The Good Fight is terrific. This is not a slight against
no,
the Good Fight.
The Good Fight should everybody live on forever, no not matter
we
what
have
happens.
Had, we've had multiple forever staff members of the Good Fight on this show, and
that's
we'll
right
continue to.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. So no, I agree with you guys, and you know, I feel like if we just were talking, you know, even tonight on tonight's show, there's a lot of good things going on, but you know, we're not. Last year, I think, and this is part of what Phillies fans are not willing to let happen to themselves in 2025. The way they played at the start of last year, people started allowing themselves to think like, are we going to set the all-time wins record? Like, are we going to, like, there were those, I wrote an article saying, you know, like, they're kind of on pace for these things. It's probably not going to happen, but you know, what a start there. You know, there's no weaknesses on the team right now. And it's right now, there were no weaknesses on the team. It didn't end up being that way. But I think, you know, as a fan base there, everybody's reluctant to truly just dive in when the going is good and just be happy about it, because there's generally speaking in sports for almost every team, a shoe that drops and no one wants it dropped on their head. So there's a little bit of a defense mechanism that goes into place about it. And that's, we also have three podcasts a week to do. So we're three different people
with three different experiences and ways we watch the Phillies, way we engage with the game. We might share some opinions, but the value we hope you get from the podcast, whether you agree with it or not, is that you get a variety of opinions and thoughts.
Right.
You know, on certain things. And while you may agree with them, you may not agree with them. That's kind of the point. That's kind of the point of the podcast. You listen to it to hear the opinions of these people, and you agree or you don't. And if you don't, feel free to let us know. We'd love to hear from you. We'd love to hear from listeners. If you agree with us, you can let us know, but that's also more boring. The same way a podcast that is all positive would be, because we'd just be saying, wow, did you see that home run? That was great. Look at that ERA. It's super. Let's look at some other numbers about this, about, you know, Zach Wheeler, whoever it is. Look at those great numbers. Those are cool. This is an audio podcast, not a video podcast. We cannot show you clips and be like, ooh, we can't do that. So in reality, Keith sending in that voice message is exactly the way things should work. Thank you, Keith. For continuing the cycle of normalcy.
Yep. And Keith's a good guy. Talked to him a lot over the past few years. And Pat, thank you for sending that in. And we'd like to have conversations like this on the podcast. So send us voice memos. Send us emails. Again, hittingseason@billypenn.com. All right, let's finish things up with a little bit of nonsense, guys, quickly as we're finishing up the show. The Rockies fired Bud Black this week. After the Rockies lost 21-0 to the Padres at home, San Diego, three touchdowns in the first half to wipe out Colorado in that game.
Their pitcher threw a complete game shutout in that one too.
Who did?
Their pitcher. I don't know who it was. I don't remember off the top of my head.
Oh.
But their pitcher threw a complete game shutout.
They kept him in for the whole game, up 21 runs. Like,
yep.
Of all the people,
it doesn't seem healthy.
What is this, San Diego? What's Mike Schilt doing? Come on, man. And then the Pirates fired Derek Shelton last week after, and this is like, this is many years now where these two teams have been floundering in the wilderness. Two really good fan bases, stuck watching brutal baseball year in and year out. They play in great stadiums, unlike the Phillies teams back in the day when Veterans Stadium was a hole in the earth. And like there's you couldn't even go to a nice stadium to watch bad baseball. You had to go to a dump to watch bad baseball, even though I still love the Vet. It's going to always be my favorite place. But unless you guys have something to say about the Rockies or the Pirates in particular, or the firings, which I don't think we care enough about either one of those teams to have anything really forceful to say about it. It got me thinking, like, what are these?
I just want to say Bob Nutting issued a statement that included how, like, oh yeah, we want to move with a little more urgency. We, the Pirates, and we got to like course correct here for sure. And you're like, yeah, wow. I guess it was this. This was the moment that the Pirates started acting with a sense of urgency.
This is
where
to
go,
said,
Bob Nutting,
I believe they said
the guy
that
who can't
last
walk
year.
Through the stadium without getting booed and told to sell the team. Yes, yes, you will be the one to begin in a sense of urgency within the Pittsburgh Pirates. Absolutely,
this was the breaking point. Apparently, it took a long time, but we finally reached it in Pittsburgh. But I'm thinking about these two fan bases and just how dreadful it must be. And how disinterested I would be, even as a diehard fan of the team, how disinterested I would be. Like, can you imagine being a Rockies podcaster? I mean, even as we were starting this podcast 10 years ago and the Phillies were going through that rebuild and we had some really dark years at the start of this podcast, I don't think it was anything like what the Rockies and their fans are going through right now, or what the Pirates have been going through since Andrew McCutchen's MVP days were over. Like, it's been decades of bad baseball there in these two franchises. And there doesn't appear to be any hope in sight for either of these two teams. It got me thinking, like, what was the worst Philly season of my lifetime? What was the worst Philly season of your lifetime? For me, I'll go first. It was 1996, last place finish, 67-95, no stars on the team. I mean, you had Jim Eisenreich.
The year they hosted the All-Star game.
That was the coup de grace. Because so not only funny. Was it a bad team, okay? They were 30 and a half games out of first place by the end of August. They were 30 games under 500 on September 20th. Jim Eisenreich and Benito Santiago were tied for the most WAR at 2.9 each. It was Dykstra's last year. You had Greg Jeffries, Mickey Morandini, Kevin Stocker before the Bobby Abreu trade. I forgot that he played so many years in Philadelphia. Yeah. Todd Zeal was the everyday third baseman. Pete Incaviglia was still playing left field for the Phillies.
Wow.
He left and came back.
He did leave and come back. That's right. That's right. Ricky Otero, Mark Witten, Wendell McGee. They had 15 different pitchers make at least one start. Listen to these names. This is great. Schilling was their guy. Mike Williams. The rotting corpse of Terry Mulholland, Mike Mims, Mike Grace, Rich Hunter, Sid Fernandez for a minute and a half.
Wow.
Matt Beach, David West, Bobby Munoz, Calvin Maduro, Glenn Dishman, Carlos Crawford, and Rafael Quirico were your starting pitchers that year.
I fell in love with baseball watching these teams.
I know. But Ricky Bitalico, who had a great year, having a relief pitcher be your only starting pitch, be your only representative at the All-Star game. And by the way, the humiliation of Veterans Stadium at that stage in its life to be hosting baseball's premier event, like, it was, you talk about the very definition of lipstick on a pig. It was trying to dress up Veterans Stadium for the 1996 All-Star game. truly. And the worst year I've ever lived through as a Phillies fan. Do any of you guys have a contender?
Go ahead, Liz.
I was going to say, I don't think it's definitely not as bad. And weirdly enough, the 2017 Phillies did not lose as many games as the 2015 Phillies, who lost 99 games and won just 63. The 2017 Phillies were at 66 and 96. Fifth of five, they finished 31 games out of first place. Their only all-star was Pat Neshek, a relief pitcher.
Yeah.
I remember I had a softball game that night. I came home and turned on the All-Star game, and like two innings in, he had already come and gone. They had burned through like immediately. It's like, well, all right.
You know, there are a lot of reasons why this is.
It was after like a week of Pat Neshek content on the Good Fight. Just a constant stream. I was like hammering that site with Pat Neshek facts. Was like, yes. And then we're going to go in and we're going to see him pitch. And I missed it. They didn't even get to see him pitch.
What a letdown.
I mean, there are a lot of reasons why this season isn't as bad as 96, but it's one of the worst seasons I remember. Because the 2015 Phillies, I was kind of ready for. You know, they came in the middle of a lot. But 2017, like, there were some great things in that year. There's Rhys Hoskins, his debut in that year. And that got all of our hopes up. And then there was the I think it was the end of August, beginning of September. Like, the Phillies can make it. They can do this. And then they just fell off of a cliff onto their bellies in a giant pile of mud. And it was one of the most depressing months of baseball I ever remember living through, because they didn't even have to do too much to win, to make it to the playoffs, and they just couldn't do it. And then at the end of the season, we got this gift of Pete Maccannon being fired for no reason and replaced later on with Gabe Kaplan. Like, it was like a final insult. Like, do you think things have gotten bad? Just wait.
They thought they had an idea.
They thought they did.
Yeah.
Yep.
Matt Klentak, that did not work out. And I remember Pat Gillick telling him, you get one mistake like this, and that's pretty much it. And it didn't work. He said, if it doesn't work out, you might not get another one. And he really didn't after that. What about you, Justin?
Well, just a quick note on 96. That year also stands out among all those other bad to worse years, because that's that part of that stretch of time where, like, all the way back to Dalton and all the way ahead to Ruiz, there was only one season where the starting opening day catcher wasn't Darren Dalton, Mike Lieberthal, or Carlos Ruiz, and it was Benito Santiago starting on opening day 1996. And the rest of it was like, somebody looked back and was like, wow, the Phillies have incredible longevity with their starting catchers. And all those guys were homegrown and maybe there's some credit to be given here in those three examples. But my season was 2000, because I spent a lot of the 90s, as the Phillies did, marveling at how it wasn't 1993 anymore. Guys from that team who were still there by like 97, 98 were just left wondering what happened to the vibes and the fans and the city and the attendance numbers. And there's just kind of left this bummer energy around the Phillies by that point. And in Kavilia, like you said, he'd come back from overseas, and he was just, I read this article where he just kept talking about how things like used to be so much better and more fun, but the Phillies really fractured from 93 up to 97, I think specifically in that era. And it really kind of was revealed 93 wound up being this oasis, and you had strike shortened seasons in 94 and 95. They come out blazing in 95 and even looked like they'd sustain it until, of course, they didn't. And then spent the rest of the 90s watching the sport sort of change culturally.
Yeah.
So like the 93 guys are commonly known as these throwback players, partially because they were living and breathing baseball when they weren't living and breathing other chemicals. And they were hanging out after games, like talking shop, having beers, like breaking down like the any problems they're having, like at the plate, or like how they want to approach the team tomorrow. And then this generation of younger players comes in who treated the locker room more like a clubhouse, or less like a clubhouse and more like an office. Mm-hmm. And like they had their own posses and entourages. They were a little more aloof. There were scorned superstars and failed prospects and poor free agent signings. At one point, Lee Thomas was like literally asking the Inquirer, why do fans feel like the Phillies have a shot, need to have like a shot at October to come to a game in July? Like really trying to work that argument of like, you should just come watch baseball and the Phillies because they're baseball and the Phillies. They shouldn't have to be like a really good team for you to be interested and willing to spend money in them. So this, they got up to like 2000. They worked their way through the late 90s and 2000. That was about the time I personally just started looking away from the Phillies for a couple of years. I had followed them with like one eye in the headlines, but I didn't watch a lot of games or pay a lot of attention because I was in high school and there were other things to do. And my sophomore year of college was 2007, and I kind of rolled seamlessly back into being deranged. But for a couple of years, I wasn't watching, and the last team I would have been watching was 2000. those early aughts teams famously kind of hated each other. There's that story in 2003, Tim Worrell punched the pitching coach and broke his glasses. They had to like sneak him out a back door so the reporters wouldn't see. You had these guys from like the World Series team, the past World Series team, like Morandini, and they're playing with guys who would be on the next World Series team, like Pat Burrell. But then like between them were like Lieberthal, Bobby Abreu, Scott Rowland, Doug Glanville, Ron Gant, Desi Relaford. There's like a lot of good players in there. And some of them were having like pretty good years, but they were like lethargic. Their bats didn't work. They're the lowest scoring team in baseball. Their pitching was really missable, never really dominant. And it made for especially funny because the baseball world was talking about like steroids and juiced up baseballs and Jick Stick the long ball and everybody's hitting home runs and has giant biceps. And the Phillies were up there like,
yeah.
So, you know, you had to wait until Jimmy Rollins was playing in more than 14 games a season. But I'm going to say the 2000 Phillies, because they lost 97 games and they formally kind of ended. I feel like 1993 went from being like something we experienced to like a memory at the turn of the millennium. And they gave me no reason to not go do other things for 3 or 4 years.
All good candidates. And for those of you listening, would love to hear your thoughts on which Philly season was the worst for you. You can send those to hittingseason@billypenn.com. I would love to hear what you have to say.
Or a voice
All right,
note. Don't
let's
forget,
finish.
Voice notes.
Voice memos as well. Yeah, send in a voice memo. We'll play them on the show. All right. Final thoughts time. Liz, any final thoughts from you?
If you have anything interesting to say about baseball, if you're doing a research project, if you are a numbers person, if you have done some research, if you like history, please write up your article and send it to us at Sabre to be published possibly in the fall 2025 edition of the Baseball Research Journal. We are accepting pitches now. I have been going through the queue and starting to edit things and talk with authors, and it's really fun. I love this job. It's really exciting and fun, all the different opinions I get to read about baseball, and I get to make sure that normal people understand it. Normal people like me understand it. So if you have anything, it could be about the Phillies, it could be about any team. It doesn't have to be about a team. It could be about a statistic or manager, anything. We would love to hear from you. And if it doesn't fit for us at the Baseball Research Journal, we're pretty committed to finding a place for it to be published on Sabre as a whole, because Sabre has a lot going on at any given time. Tons of committees for you to join. Negro Leagues, Women in Baseball. We've got baseball overseas. We've got foreign baseball today. One of my good friends, Michael Clare, is a reporter for MLB.com, and his focus is all international baseball, mostly in Europe. And I've been encouraging him to write something up for us, because I would love to publish something like that in the future. So if you have any ideas, please, please strongly consider sending them in written form to us. And if you have questions about anything, please hit me up on Blue Sky. And I do occasionally check Twitter these days. But find me online and ask me questions. I'm more than happy to answer. You can find all the information you need at sabre.org, S-A-B-R.org.
Fantastic. And that's at Liz Rocher on the Blue Sky.
So R-O-S-C-H-E-R.
Yeah. And you can also you can also send it to anything to hittingseason@billypenn.com, and Liz will see it there as well.
Absolutely.
Justin, final thoughts, bud.
You guys keeping up with this Rafael Devers situation?
Yes,
in
I
Boston?
Have been.
No.
I thought about adding something about this to the rundown tonight,
this?
But I ran out.
So I'm not here to break that whole thing
down.
I'm just
going to have to learn about it.
The abridged version is that they want him to change positions again, and he's like, no, I don't want to do that. And the general argument or the general response from national media that I've seen is, hey, you just signed a very lucrative 10-year contract. You should do what you're told. And the I don't know what you call it, the producer guy on the Baseball Tonight podcast was talking to Buster Olney about this.
Good.
And he said, if they tell you to scrub the balls, you'll do it, and you should be like happy for the opportunity to do that.
Yeah.
I was just curious what your guys' thoughts would be to that sentiment, because I thought, whoa, buddy, I feel like, you know, you're making an argument, but you're you're really taking that to a whole other level.
Well, I mean, I guess it's all about if, you know, somebody, if I don't have a job, and I don't think most people listening have a job where if your boss asks you to do something, and it doesn't sound like the Red Sox told him you're doing this. They approached him and asked him about changing positions. And, you know, he said no, is what it sounds like to me as I've read the story.
They have already asked him to change positions once and he did it.
Right. And, you know, if my personality
not super
is
agreeably
my personality, and I think, you know, a lot of people's personalities would be like, okay, I'll because we're people pleasers, and you know, I'm a people pleaser, and I want people to like me, and so I usually do things that I'm asked to do because I'm a hopeless people pleaser. So if you're asked to, if your boss asks you to do it, and you can, and you have the ability to respectfully say no, if you truly don't think it's good for you, or you truly can't do it, then that's fine. And I think, you know, then that's, but if you're being told by your employer what to do and you say no, I think that's a different thing entirely. You know, you're under the employment of someone. If my boss comes to me and says, I want you to go cover this thing, and I say, no, I'd really rather not do that. I don't think I'm going to be working there for very long. And certainly I'm not going to be entrusted with future opportunities, but it's a very different job. I don't have a 10-year contract where I'm a multimillionaire. So you can't really, it's such a unique situation. I think the one headline I saw is being a good teammate is a two-way street. And like the Red Sox are being a better teammate to Devers than Devers is being to them.
I mean, it depends on how far apart you think the hassle of like, hey, superstar, you know, you're trying to like get in a groove. Like he was not hitting super well to start the season. So like he's trying to get in a groove and find his spot and get in the right headspace for 2025. And they're like, hey, for the second time, we're going to change your position. I can see that making a player feel like, okay, what are we doing with me? What are we doing in general here? Like, this is happening because of an injury. But still, this is, it just feels like, what is my role? And letting a player just get locked in and know where they're going to play every day. We've talked before in other situations about how keeping a player that comfortable is only going to be beneficial, and asking them to move around, a bunch of times might not be. Now, look, I'm also just taking the other side of this because you went with the Red Sox. I don't feel super strongly about him just like he should be able to offer his opinion, I think, in the way that he is a, you know, central player to the Red Sox. He is their franchise player now, the way that Bryce Harper is for the Phillies. So his influence shouldn't end with his signature on the contract. But, you know, there's also, I think your argument's totally valid that like, yeah, at the end of the day, though, this is where we need you right now. And it would be great if you could help the team out. But yeah, I don't know. I just felt like the condescending nature of the national media, which is repetitive after the Ronald Acuña Jr. comments, and they all finger wagged at him and said that should have stayed private. That just really bugs me when there's just this giant shaming at a player for expressing, for using their agency in a way that the national media doesn't approve of. So they just act like it was objectively the wrong angle to take.
I have to say, I'm kind of baseball. I like to sometimes try to relate baseball clubhouses to normal workplaces, but they're not. Baseball is a sport, and it is very much not a traditional workplace where traditional workplace rules are allowed. How many of us are naked in our jobs with a whole bunch of other people changing after a very sweaty baseball game? Like, there's so many things that are allowed in baseball that aren't here. And I think the fact that he signed a contract is one of the things that's bothering him, because they signed him to play at this position. He's already done it once. And I would love to know, we're never going to know 100% how the Red Sox brought this to him, but it kind of seems like he's responding this way for a reason. If they came to him with in a different way, maybe this would have ended differently, but he seems pretty peeved at the way he was asked. You know, yeah.
He was already peeved that they asked him to move from third base to DH because he was like, oh, so now that entire dimension of my game is like now not a part of my playing every day.
Exactly.
He has said that upset him.
That limits his value. It's like when a starter is taken out of the rotation and put into the bullpen. They are annoyed. And it's really the same exact thing. They're annoyed. People get upset. And it's just because you know, it lowers their value. This lowers Devers' value. I think as a first baseman, he's definitely not as valuable as he would be.
Yeah.
And he says this one thing in an article. I've now been fully educated on this issue in the last 3 minutes. He said one thing recently. I'm not certain what issue he has with me, Devers said, of Chief Baseball Officer Craig Breslow, who played 12 years in the majors. He played ball, and I would like to think that he knows that changing positions like that isn't easy. I think there's something to that. I am kind of surprised that Breslow would be like, yeah, please change positions to a less valuable position. We can't really give you any information about what it's going to look like past this year. We certainly hope Tristan Casas comes back, but shrug, who knows? Right. I think the Red Sox kind of mishandled this. They should know there's a way to talk to your players. And they just don't seem interested in all the time going the extra mile and being like, all right, we have to figure out how to relate to this player because we've already asked him to change positions once and he wasn't happy with it.
Well,
that in and of itself says to me that it broadcasts just a lack of caring about their player and like an ultimate focus on the end result as opposed to how they get there and the attitude of the people who are involved.
And I'll say this, I get the argument that some people will make listening to this is like, hey, team first. If the team needs you to do this because of an injury, you know, team first, you know, why don't look out for yourself before you look out for the team, especially when you have signed a long-term contract. You're not getting another big money deal after this. But I will say too, like you mentioned, this was mishandled. It should have never been made public unless you have Devers on board. Like no one should have said anything about this publicly. And that's one thing, I can't imagine the Phillies blurting something out like, yeah, we'd like to, you know, have Bohm move to left field permanently if Bohm hadn't signed on, because now you're putting pressure on the player publicly to acquiesce to what it is you want to do, and that can set off a player, you know. So in that way too, it was botched, and that automatically will make a player defensive and not want to do what you want to do.
I think Devers is the one who made it public.
No, I think it was somebody. I think the manager said nothing's been set in stone yet like that.
I see. But,
and then he reacted to that is how I believe it went down. Oh. Correct me if I'm wrong, people, if you're listening and I have that back.
That's a rookie move, man. What are you doing?
Yeah, I think that's how that went down.
If the Red Sox need a first baseman and they want Devers to play first base and it would make them better at this stretch of time for him to play first base, then yeah, like he is being a bad teammate by not agreeing to help the team. However, he also has the right to be a bad teammate.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's true. Everyone does. That's kind of the point of having a union.
Yeah.
You're allowed to be, you know, you are protected because, you know, you should be a good teammate and do this, but he doesn't have to, and they didn't tell him to. And so I don't think they want to be in the position to tell him to do something because that will not end well.
Right.
Ugh.
All right. Well, that's a good way to end the podcast. I like that. Good question, Justin.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Now they're all nice and worked up. Let's go punch a wall and hit the hay.
That's right. Well, at least we have a Phillies loss to cushion the blow here on Monday night. The Phillies did lose 3-2 to the Cardinals. The Cardinals run their winning streak to 9 games, but the Phillies will try to win the series by taking the next two. We will see. But folks, don't forget, check out, if you want to send an email, anything, again, hittingseason@billypenn.com. Make sure to also leave a 5-star rating at Apple Podcast. Leave a written note at Spotify also. Let us know what you think about the show there too. Help the podcast grow. Anytime you can go on social media and tell folks about the podcast, we would appreciate that greatly. Thanks everybody for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time right here on Hittin' Season.